rain likely, and 51 degrees expected. We are at 50 degrees right now. KQEN News Time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, we are approaching, thankfully, the end of 2020. And you're going to be hearing over the next few days a lot of perspective about the end of the year from a number of vantage points. We wanted to check in with Jim Bohannon. He's here weeknights 7 to 10, has been for about 14 years on News Radio 1240 KQEN, joining us from the Washington, D.C. area. Jim, thanks for being on.
Hey, my pleasure, and thank you very much. Really appreciate it, Kyle.
So as a longtime talk show host, what was this like this year like for you?
Well, it certainly was a year in which a lot of the variety got squeezed out of what we talked about. Of course, we started off with the presidential impeachment, and then pretty soon that strange thing that was happening over in China became a lot more dangerous than strange, and we were talking more and more about this pandemic, whatever this COVID thing was. And then, of course, we have had the presidential primaries, this time for the Democrats, and we watched Joe Biden finally emerge as the victor. So that at least was what we had in mind for the year. But through it all, I think a lot of what I've enjoyed in less stressful years, some of the more mundane topics, they got squeezed away. And if you weren't talking about politics, you were talking about the pandemic.
What was it like to cover news, to interview these national, international newsmakers in the midst of this pandemic?
Well, the pandemic, of course, tended to intrude on virtually everything. It was hard even to talk about politics without clearly looking at the political side of the pandemic. We would talk about the economy, and of course, that had to be talked about in the context of the economic shutdown. So it affected virtually everything we talked about, and in a way it was a distraction. I mean, of course, it's not here to entertain me. It's here to provide a public service, and so you do what you do. But from the host perspective, I must confess that in more ways than one, I got very tired of the pandemic and still am.
What's your view of the federal response to the whole pandemic, COVID-19?
Well, in the beginning, I thought that we did act properly and decisively in terms of blocking travel from China. We didn't act nearly as quickly as we could have on blocking travel from Europe, and that unfortunately created a lot of the problems that we had in the country. The move to the crash program of creating a vaccine was unprecedented, and one of the spectacular successes of the federal government in its entire history. You have to remember the classic definition of a crash program, that is getting 9 women pregnant in hopes of producing a baby in 1 month. And this actually belied that particular old adage. And in fact, the crash program did work, and we now have 2 or 3 vaccines ready to go. At the end of the year, I would note one other problem, I think, with the federal response. We're not using the vaccines we have. The theory is that we're using about half of them because this particular vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, is a 2-dose vaccine. We could be inoculating people with the first dose, which is about 80% effective. And then by the time it's time for people to get the second dose, there'll be enough second doses out there. So I think we're mismanaging that. So it's been a mixed story.
What about the presidential election? Let's focus on that one. You mentioned the Democratic Party, let's talk about both sides of the aisle, just how you thought this year went, especially with all the disputes.
Well, certainly, of course, one thing different about this presidential election is that Donald Trump was involved, and he certainly has a way of sometimes not watching his tongue too well. He would have served himself a lot better had he thought before he blurted, or in the digital age, before he tweeted. And I think that hurt him a great deal. That was part of it. One thing was, of course, that the Democrats had such a widely split field. The Democratic Party has certainly moved further to the left than at any time in its history. So those were factors involved here. I think that what we've probably seen in terms of a Biden administration, people are saying, some are saying that he's merely a puppet whose strings are being pulled. Well, if they're being pulled, they're not being pulled by the far left. They're being pulled by the Democratic Party establishment, of which Biden has been pretty much a charter member. So for those of us who tend to lean more in a conservative direction, the Biden administration appears as though it will be not quite as bad as we might have feared. It doesn't look like the arrival of Bernie Sanders quite.
It seems like going back over his career that Biden was kind of looked upon as being kind of a centrist progressive. He tended to pull in a lot of business support, also worked across the aisle quite a bit. But certainly he was really the only one of the candidates that went very far in the race that had those credentials.
That's true. A part of that, I think, is reputation more than anything else. Joe Biden, first and foremost, has always blown with the winds. He's never been what we would call an ideologue. In fact, I have in the past accused him, and I don't think unfairly, of having a great versatility of conviction. Whichever way the Democratic Party is blowing, then Joe's blowing in the same direction. But we should keep one thing in mind. There was a survey that was taken back in 2007. That's been 13 years ago. But that survey, there are various groups that rank votes on Capitol Hill. The American Conservative Union, of course, gives you higher marks on votes for conservative views. The Americans for Democratic Action, higher views for liberal votes. ACLU, more liberal. And this was simply a ranking of the members of the U.S. Senate by how those votes added up, according to the various rankings. And I remember from that survey, this was 2007, U.S. senators, the three most liberal U.S. senators by their voting records. Number three was Barack Obama of Illinois. Number two was Bernie Sanders of Vermont. And the most liberal senator by his voting record in 2007 was Joe Biden. So I think that a lot of this centrist is more public relations and reputation than it is, in fact. Whichever way the party is blowing, that's where you'll find Joe. And right now it's blowing to the left.
Have you gotten a chance to talk to him over the years?
I have on a couple of occasions, briefly at Democratic conventions. My wife had a chance to talk to him one time. I was at a dinner in Washington, and I'd gone up to the head table to talk to some of the participants, and I was probably 20 so feet away. My wife was standing there, and this person came up to her on her right, standing next to her, put his arm around her and began stroking her left shoulder, and then left. That was the senior senator from Delaware, Joe Biden. I did not witness this and would have certainly interrupted it had I seen it. He didn't have Secret Service protection then. So any story you hear about Joe Biden's womanizing, I will tell you flat out front that I believe it.
What about the death of George Floyd? When that took place, we had one more thing in the mix of intense issues.
Well, we certainly did, and of course, this was just one that was going to happen. We have had a history of violence mixed in with racial issues now for, several centuries. And so I think the way sentiments were in the country, probably it was going to happen sooner or later, and in fact, in some cases, it already had. We've had an unfortunate tendency in this country to lump various issues together. White cop, black perp, instant racism. Well, maybe. And maybe not. I think from what we've seen of the video regarding George Floyd, it's hard to excuse the actions by the officers, as Floyd was completely subdued and there was no need to do what was done that eventually led to his death, even though I'm told it was part of the Minneapolis police training regimen. On the other hand, people often equate that with Michael Brown, and I mean, this was just a two-bit punk who had just held up a store who was going to die violently, and unfortunately, he mixed in a cop, Darren Wilson, with the entire situation. So every case has got to be judged individually. And that's, I think, a real failing with this country, and in particular the news media. No, white cop, black perp, instant racism. No, not necessarily. Judge the case by the specifics of the facts of each case.
This seemed to really, though, and maybe it was partly because of people were so fixated on current events due to COVID, it really seemed to get the attention like no other incident had.
Well, certainly it has. It's been a while. You can go back a few years, of course, things like Rodney King, obviously the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. on a much larger scale was the same sort of thing. So certainly much larger than most, and it did precipitate a lot of troubles across the country. And, of course, in this era of widespread mainstream media and social media, where everybody's got a camera and a microphone they carry around in their pocket, instantly there were a lot of people out there who were protesting and the like. And, of course, this is another problem where we tend to judge every incident just flat out the same way. A lot of the protests did begin peacefully. Not all of them, but a lot of them did. And then, in many cases, you had the riffraff, the lowlifes, who just were out to loot and pillage and burn, and they more or less took over these demonstrations. Now, if you're a cop and you're out there and you see some people and they're protesting and they're chanting and they've got signs, and all of a sudden mixed in with them are all these people who are smashing windows and looting and burning, and your job is to try and maintain a semblance of law and order, inevitably, if you do your job, then some of these are going to be mixed in together. And that was unfortunate. There were peaceful protesters, and there were low-life riffraff. And unfortunately, it was very hard for a police officer to do his or her job and keep the two separate.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. Jim Bohannon, you can hear him tonight, 7 to 10 on News Radio 1240 KQEN. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1. County Commissioner Tim Freeman on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County program. We'll also get some year-end perspective from Doug Steffen of the National DJV Show, which you hear from 2 to 6 a.m. Doug will join us tomorrow for the morning conversation at 8:30. Jim Bohannon with us now from the Washington, D.C. area this afternoon, with the president, even today, still talking about challenging the results of the election and things going on behind the scenes. How intense do you think the next few weeks could get in the U.S.?
Well, that's hard to say. We know what some things are going to be. We now know that first of all, of course, we've got January 5th, the Georgia twin Senate runoff races. And the very next day, why Georgia, with Congress having already reconvened January 3rd, why Georgia would have a runoff election 2 days into the new term, I have no idea. But in any event, the next day after that election, and if it's close, we may not even know who the two Georgia senators are when the House and the Senate will convene in the House chamber, as they do every 4 years, and the president of the Senate, that is to say the vice president, Mike Pence, will read the results of the Electoral College. Sometimes the vice presidents have read the results of their own political careers. I can think back to, for example, Al Gore announcing that he had lost the presidency in 2000, Richard Nixon announcing he had lost the presidency in 1960. Now, at this point, if a House member and one House member and one Senate member should object to the results of the Electoral College, then each chamber will then retire to its own side. That is, the House members will stay in the House, the senators will all troop up to the north side of Capitol Hill, and they will convene for perhaps 2 hours of debate. And they will then debate over whether or not to accept the Electoral College vote results. It'll be a very partisan affair, and Democrats will vote to accept in the House, and that'll be the end of it. Even though it's not clear what will happen in the Senate, a lot of Republicans are saying that they will challenge the result. A lot of others are saying that they will not. But in all likelihood, enough Republicans will defect that the Democrats will prevail in both houses, and Joe Biden will be officially certified as the president-elect of the United States to be sworn in on January the 20th. We will see. That's the last hurdle. I mean, there's nothing left after that. So we'll see what comes out of that. But I'm sure there will be a lot of people who feel that that they were cheated, and there will be a lot of people who will feel that this was not a fair election. There is fraud in every election. There's ample evidence that there was a lot more fraud in this election. Now you get down to the issue, and if we find the people who committed this fraud, they should be all charged, prosecuted, and if convicted, they should serve the maximum time, which whatever it is, I'm sure it's not enough. However, then that brings up the second question. Was there enough fraud that is documented that it would alter the outcome? That would be very hard to prove and has been so far for the president and his lawyers. So the short answer is that there will be unhappiness. How much, I don't know, but Joe Biden is going to be taking the oath of office on January the 20th, and there seems very little that will change that.
Other than, or rather, once the vaccine is out, do you think, out for a while, do you think things will begin to settle down a bit?
It would certainly so appear once we get substantial numbers with the vaccine, and presumably people at that point, substantial numbers will then have acquired relative immunity. We're told these two vaccines were about 95% effective, so that'll cut way back on the number of potential victims. If, in fact, as one estimate has come out, that by June, expect every American who wants a shot to have gotten a shot, at that point, there's, assuming that there aren't a ton of people out there who refuse to get them, that we ought to be in a position where we could begin to resurrect the economy, yeah.
And do you think, though, that we're going to see, I mean, what do you think the level of resistance we're going to see for the vaccine is going to be?
I don't know. I hear some on my program. I mean, there is an anti-vaxxer group out there. I personally do not join them. I also don't happen to believe the world is flat. I think it's a very, very short-sighted viewpoint. And I put it in pretty much the same category with people who just don't want to wear a mask or socially distance themselves. I mean, there are people, I swear, in this country, Kyle, who if they had lived in London in 1940 would have said, "What? Turn out my lights? I dare those German bombers to bomb my house. I got a right to keep my lights on." I mean, there are actions that you need to take.
And why is it that the whole issue of some of these COVID restrictions and things, how has that gotten to be a more of a partisan thing sometimes?
Well, part of the problem is the fact that it has been implemented in many unfair ways. For example, you can find it much more easy to gather in a casino or even a strip club than, say, in a church, for example. It has been, you see examples of many people in top positions, like Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker, and Governor Cuomo of New York, who have issued these great edicts on what you cannot do, and then they've been photographed and videoed doing exactly what they have told everybody else not to do. It's the hypocrisy that has led to part of that. And also, I think, unfortunately, the viewpoint in more than a few circles, that a lot of people out there in positions of power just don't understand how a free enterprise society works. I mean, they don't understand the creation of wealth. They seem to think that businesses have a money tree growing in the backyard, and they can always meet payroll by going out and plucking a few $100 bills off the money tree. I think part of it is ignorance, part of it is hypocrisy, and unfortunately, had this been more fairly and wisely administered, I think you'd have seen a lot less of that.
It seems like this year has probably been the most polarizing year in recent memory. What are your thoughts?
Oh, certainly in recent memory. I've got a very old memory, so I can go back to 1968, which was very divisive, and I've been asked this before. And on balance, well, there was more bloodshed in 68, but of course you had the murders of Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert Kennedy. Probably we were a little more divided, I think, but I can't be too definitive on that. I would say 1968 may have been more so. Before that, you'd have to go back another century to the Civil War.
How was your life differently for you personally this year during all of this going on?
I work from home, so it hasn't been that much different for me. The subject matter, of course, has been much more restricted to the big topics that we noted. We haven't traveled as much. I was supposed to be the master of ceremonies for the Radio Hall of Fame. I did that virtually. I annually am the master of ceremonies for the National Press Club Society of Professional Journalists Award. I've been doing that now since the 80s, and I did that virtually with a tuxedo coat and a shirt and tie and sweatpants because, of course, the Zoom camera can't see below my waist. So it's been different in that regard. We traveled hardly at all this past year. We pretty much stayed at home. So it's been different for us like it has been for most people.
But you were already working from home and have been for a long time, right?
Yeah, I've been working from home now for about 5 years, so to that extent, it was not different at all. And I work from my house, and that's nice.
And what about the fact, though, that means, and maybe you're Zooming some of your guests on so you can actually see them, but I know in interviewing folks sometimes, you don't always get it's different to interview somebody live in person in the same room versus on the phone or even on Zoom.
Yeah, we have not used Zoom at all. Our interviews, if the person is not in the studio, that person is on the telephone. So we've not used Zoom at all. It has always been, I think, a more fun experience for me to have persons in the studio. But this has all been telephone for us. And in that regard, it's not, to me, as good. But, you do the best you can.
What do you see ahead for the U.S. in 2021?
I think that we will see widespread vaccinations. I think you will see vaccine starting to work. The pandemic will recede, although it won't ever go away. I think every year we'll get a shot for COVID-19, just as we do now for the flu. I think it'll just become an annual occurrence. It won't kill as many people because we'll have herd immunity by that time. The economy will pick up, and of course we'll already start worrying about the 2022 midterm election. So we're going to get back to normal, I would think.
Any thoughts for you about retiring?
No, Kyle, I've always sworn that my last words on this planet will be right back.
Jim Bohannon, nationally syndicated talk show host here tonight and every weeknight, 7 to 10 on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Jim, thanks for being on. We really appreciate it.
Hey, great pleasure, Kyle. It's always a great thing to be on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, 1258 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.